Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 122. My name is John. Hit me with your best shot. Fire away. I had planned to do this about a month ago already, but you know how life has been for us in the past few weeks. So I decided to go ahead and time this podcast with the early release of the movie. I had no idea what to expect from Birds of Prey and the fantabulous emancipation of one Harley Quinn, or Harley Quinn Birds of Prey as it's been renamed, but I knew I was going to see it as soon as it came out. It was a DC movie. It had characters in it I wanted to see on the big screen. It looked like it was going to be fun. It has not done as well as expected, which is a damn shame because it really is a good movie. It's a little dark, which I've long said I prefer, but you know how some people are about how a superhero movie is supposed to be. It's for mature audiences, which helps not having bratty kids around talking during the movie. It's got a little more depth to it than other recent DC movies, but doesn't pose any philosophical questions like Batman vs. Superman. As manic as Harley Quinn is, and as crazy as the movie gets, it still has a great theme about being your own person. Harley Quinn is one of those comic book characters that didn't start out as a comic book character. Harley started out in the Batman the Animated Series cartoon back in the early 90s. The character gained popularity, so soon she was making appearances in the comic book tie-in series that mimicked the unique visual style. Eventually, she broke into the mainstream DC universe and is now one of the most popular characters. She has a solo comic book series and a wickedly funny, not-for-children animated series on the DC Universe streaming service. Here's the thing that's going to piss some people off. I didn't care much for Harley in Batman the Animated Series. She was annoying comic relief, and the more she interacted with Joker, the less I liked her. Maybe it's my personal uneasiness with people who stay in toxic relationships, but it wasn't until she started having separate stories from Joker that I began to take a shine to her character. There was a lot of buzz around her solo comics, so I gave them a try, and that's where she really grew on me. Any character's going to be interesting with the right characters producing the stories. Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor have been guiding the character for many years now, and they've given the character her own little hilarious corner to play with when she's not involved with the Suicide Squad or the Batman books. As for the other characters in the movie, Black Canary has long been one of my favorites. Of course, she was never on the Super Friends show back in the late 70s and early 80s, so as an 8-year-old reading Justice League of America, she was one of the first new-to-me characters that I read. Similar to Harley, I prefer stories with her away from Green Arrow. Their comic book relationship has always been rocky, and too often she's just the damsel in distress. My favorite Black Canary stories occur after she's rightfully taken on a strong leadership role with the League. Originally, in the comics, Huntress was the daughter of Batman and Catwoman. And personally, I prefer her as a legacy character. But if you know your DC history, you're also aware of her alternate origin as a crime boss's daughter, which obviously fits better for this movie. Like Harley, Renee Montoya began in the animated series. In the comic books, she eventually becomes a street-level hero and legacy character called The Question. I really like her in that role, even if that meant taking over the mantle from the original Question, Victor Sage, one of my favorite lesser-known characters. I'll get into the use of Cassandra Cain here in a second. The point is, this movie was meant to spotlight Harley Quinn, but I was going because I wanted to see the Birds of Prey. Okay, so big time spoilers from now on. Birds of Prey is about the hunt for a child pickpocket who steals a diamond from a crime boss, and how four disparate women each overcome the problems in their lives amidst the chaos. Since I like to get the negative out of the way first, I want to start off with a comment from a detractor that I read. I'll paraphrase here. Harley Quinn is a sidekick and doesn't deserve her own movie. You know, when people say stuff like that, I really have to wonder if they've picked up a comic book in the past 35 years. Plenty of sidekicks have blossomed into their own characters and sustained their own stories. You could easily point to Dick Grayson or Wally West as former sidekicks who have graduated, so to speak. Of course, the argument for those two is Grayson took on a completely different identity in Nightwing, and West took over for his dead mentor as the Flash. So, you don't like those examples? Fine. Then let's look at Tim Drake, who, as Robin, sustained his own comic book series for over 180 issues. I think a 15-plus year run proves sidekicks can do just fine on their own in their own stories. Hey, for fuck's sakes, have you watched the first season of Pennyworth? As I mentioned just moments ago, any character, even supporting characters, can be the source of good stories with the correct writers. Besides, Harley has sustained a long-running solo series for over the past several years. So get off it. Sidekicks can have their own movies. I mean, her story arc in the movie is about her breaking out of the sidekick role and coming out of the shadow of the Joker. Or are you so misogynistic that you believe a female sidekick doesn't have a story of her own to tell? Another comment I read. Someone said that this was Victor Zsasz's first live-action appearance. No. Zsasz was a regular in the Gotham television show, and he had a very brief appearance in Batman Begins. Pay attention. Just a quick aside. Can I just say that as much as I dislike the Gotham TV show, I do need to say that there were several individual characters and actors who I think were fantastic. Zsasz was one of them. But somehow, the creators managed to fit these great characters and actors together in the worst way possible. Now, this next point is not from a detractor, but Gail Simone pointed out one thing that she didn't like about the movie, and I have to agree with her. The character of Cassandra Cain is absolutely nothing like the comic book. I knew that, and I'm not even that familiar with the character, because I'm not an avid Batman family reader. Simone pointed out that they could have just made this a brand new character with a different name. I suggested Cassandra MacGuffin, but I don't think anybody got it. At the same time, I doubt we would ever get deep enough cinematically into the Batman mythos to properly portray Cassandra like she is in the comics. For those of you who don't know, Cassandra eventually becomes Batgirl. But since we haven't yet had Barbara Gordon in the current DC movies, this will likely be the best we can hope for Cassandra. But I understand the irritation. Look, as I said before, when it comes to comic book movies, it helps having grown up with the DC multiverse. There will always be necessary adjustments to characters when you're translating them from a fan-specific medium like a comic book to a mass audience medium like a motion picture. So, when I watch a superhero movie, I never expect it to be exactly like the comic book. I think of it as an alternate universe that's very similar, like the DC multiverse. However, that doesn't mean you can ignore important aspects of the character. If the comic book character has no superpowers, don't give them superpowers in their movie. I'm looking at you, Catwoman. You too, Jonah Hex. If you're not going to make Cassandra Cain anything like she is in the comic books, then don't use her as a character. Enough about other people's observations. Here are some personal notes. You may have noticed the stuffed beaver Harley has with her in the movie. This comes directly from the more recent comic book series. Just like in the movie, she talks to the beaver. Unlike in the movie, in the comics, the beaver talks back. Of course, only Harley hears the beaver. Everyone else chalks it up to Harley being more than a little crazy, which she is. I don't know if people would have been ready for it, but I wanted it. I wanted that beaver to talk back, and I'm all over the map on who should have done the voice. I thought Gilbert Gottfried at first, then T.J. Miller, even Joel Hodgson. I think it would have made the gag even funnier if the beaver is talking to Harley, and the perspective shifts in the middle of a sentence to another character wondering why Harley is talking to a piece of taxidermy. That's just me. I didn't care for the homage to Marilyn Monroe's Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, or for those not well-versed in classic movies, Madonna's Material Girl. It wasn't necessary to the movie, and it really threw things off for me. Also, just a minor complaint, I'm not a fan of cartoon openings in a live-action movie. I don't understand why Black Canary's one superpower is portrayed that way. It's like, she knows she has the canary cry, as it's called, but she has almost no experience with using it, and it seems to take a heavy physical toll on her. I just mentioned how you shouldn't change a character too much, and this is starting to get close to that edge. I wish they had been able to explain that in the movie. Now, generally, I don't like it when superhero movies kill off the bad guy, especially a major villain like the Joker in the Tim Burton Batman movie, or Two-Face in The Dark Knight. Almost as bad is when you have minor villains that are portrayed really well. Zazz and Black Mask both die. Look, if you know anything about Zazz from the comic books, you know he's a scary dude. He has tally marks scarred all over his face and body, one for each person he's killed. I don't know much about Black Mask, but I do know that Ewan McGregor played a great villain, equal parts bizarre, creepy, and hateful. It's a damn shame they've both been taken off the board. But at least they were better throwaway villains than Ares or Steppenwolf. One important thing that surprised me about the movie. Rosie Perez didn't irritate the fuck out of me. Ever since I saw White Men Can't Jump, one of my all-time least favorite movies, and It Could Happen to You, I have done my best to avoid Rosie Perez. Maybe it was just unfortunate that I saw her as whiny and very annoying characters, but I was so turned off by those two movies, I was worried about her portrayal of Renee Montoya. I'm glad I was wrong. Now, in the comic books, Renee Montoya does have a battle with alcoholism, and she hits rock bottom pretty bad. But this is the new era of DC movies, so even though this movie is a little deeper than Justice League or Aquaman, that kind of depth and drama from a recovering alcoholic, it's just not going to happen anymore. It's unfortunate because when she finally overcomes her demons in the comics and takes over the mantle of the Question when Vic Sage dies, her character really shines. And if they do manage to get a sequel, I think a story arc learning from Sage would be incredible. Again, that's just me. I'm also surprised they pull off the disjointed narrative. The movie is narrated by Harley, occasionally breaking the fourth wall and telling things out of order. Why is she assaulting a police precinct all on her own? Why is Montoya getting a call from Canary to look for Cassandra Cain? Well, Harley's going to tell you about all those threads and then get back to the assault on the police precinct later. Now, I have no problem with disjointed narratives, but I worry about how your average viewer is going to see it. What is an average viewer? I don't know. But my gauge on whether or not someone is going to have difficulty understanding a movie is my wife, Gina. If, while the end credits are rolling, she leans over and says, "You're going to have to explain something to me." I know that there was something confusing. Maybe she missed a key line in the movie or a quick action by a character that becomes key later on. Those are easy to explain. Maybe she fell asleep in the movie theater because she was in a nice, comfortable chair like when we went to see X-Men Days of Future Past. These are things I may be able to remedy. Disjointed narratives? Not so much. And don't even get me started on anything involving time travel or time-displaced characters. A while back, I watched a great movie, Arrival, with Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner. It was recently on sale for $5 on iTunes. I got it. I'm not going to show that to Gina. A deep cerebral movie? Yes, she's fine with that. A deep cerebral movie about aliens? Forget it. But Birds of Prey? No problem at all. She liked the movie. In fact, Black Canary was her favorite. For a woman who went with me to see Justice League just so she could ogle Henry Cavill, Jason Momoa, and Ben Affleck, that's saying something. Anyway, on to things that I liked about the movie. Okay, I'm going to get this out of the way first. I know this is wrong of me, as a male, to talk about the physical attributes of a female. However, Mary Elizabeth Winstead is gorgeous. I mean, every time I see her on the screen, my heart just goes pitter-patter like a cartoon bunny. Okay, I'm done with that. This movie is what Suicide Squad should have been. Street-level heroes, or anti-heroes, fighting street-level villains. In case you missed it, my biggest problem with Suicide Squad was the fact that a covert team of street-level villains with almost no powers at all was pitted against a 6,000-year-old sorceress. That's not the right matchup, especially for a debut movie. I'm really hoping this upcoming soft reboot works out. I'm glad they're keeping many of the same actors and they aren't replacing Will Smith as Deadshot. I do hope they get a better dialogue writer because "Stay evil, dollface" is still one of the worst lines in all superhero movies. Like Suicide Squad, this movie was also packed with good music, but the transition from one song to another was nowhere near as jarring in Birds of Prey. So it's good that they learned that lesson. You gotta love when the big fight scene starts. They break out Barracuda. That guitar riff kicks ass. And I bring that up specifically to contrast it with another movie in just a moment. The fight scenes in Birds of Prey are excellent. Sometimes fight scenes get so crazy you lose track of what's going on. This movie not only managed to keep extended fight scenes coherent, but each character's fighting style stayed consistent. Fight choreographers should take notes from this movie. I am very happy they took a lot of inspiration from Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Conner's take on Harley. I really enjoyed their run on the character. On any given page, you could find Harley saving a dog from a cruel owner, sunbathing in bikinis with Poison Ivy and Catwoman, or chasing down a bad guy with their Heroes for Hire team. It could be heartbreaking in one panel and loony in the next, just like Harley's mood swings in the movie. If they do continue Harley solo movies, which I hope they do, I'd like them to take on the Coney Island stories from that comic book run. This movie captured the mania of Harley and kept her on that line straddling hero and villain. Harley, Canary, and Montoya all started from a position of weakness and ended changed for the better and stronger than they were before. That doesn't make it a good superhero story. That just makes it a good story. In that respect, I would put this at the top of female-led comic book movies. I'm not saying it's better than Wonder Woman overall, but from the point of self-esteem and empowerment, I would definitely put that ahead of all the others. I mentioned a few months ago in this podcast what a waste of time Captain Marvel was for me. I am so glad I got to see it as a free movie on our flight to Hawaii. For me, the worst part, when Captain Marvel goes into alien butt-kicking mode for the big third act melee, and they play Just a Girl by No Doubt. Now, I want to make something very clear. I really like that song. I love No Doubt. I played the hell out of that CD 20-ish years ago. And yes, I get that Captain Marvel was this big love letter to 90s pop music. But for a movie that was constantly boasting about its girl power, featuring a female lead that was so powerful it never felt like she was ever in any real danger, that song felt like they were trying to beat me over the head with their message. All-powerful women displaying their all-powerful strength against obviously inferior opposition doesn't need to have a song about powerlessness and oppression. I watched a lot of shows recently with an obvious agenda taking precedence over story. I've talked before about Supergirl and their hypocritical storytelling. Reader's Digest version. I'm not going to explain to the youth out there what Reader's Digest is. The heroes of Supergirl spent an entire season pounding their analogy into our collective heads that all alien races should be allowed on the planet without prejudice, and their solution at the end was, without any irony whatsoever, to set up a shield, or wall, if you will, around the planet to keep out the bad aliens. Oh, and some good ones, too. Batwoman is a very good show. I've enjoyed it so far. Batwoman is an out-of-the-closet lesbian, so it's not surprising that there's a lot of homophobia portrayed in the show. The problem is, Batwoman, Kate Kane, is also a well-known hothead. So I think it would be really smart of the writers to have her incorrectly accuse someone of homophobia. I mean, if they truly wanted to bring all real-world scenarios into their storytelling. Not a superhero show, but spoilers here for the last couple of seasons of The Ranch. By the way, I started watching the show because Gina talked me into it. I can't say it's ever been one of my favorites, but it did grow on me a bit. Anyway, at the end of the last season, a guy who caused the family a lot of trouble was shot to death. It turns out it was the daughter of his ex-girlfriend who was at the trailer to collect her mother's belongings. The guy attacked the daughter, and she found a gun and killed him in self-defense. The final season had a far left-leaning character preach ad nauseum about guns and how this girl wouldn't be facing trouble if no gun had been there so she could shoot the bad guy. Not once does any of the pro-firearm family point out that the girl would have probably been beaten, raped, or killed by the bad guy. It's really glaring when the writers have such an agenda, they can't even be bothered to acknowledge an obvious counterpoint to their argument. Look, I get it. We all have our agendas. This podcast has an agenda, because I have an agenda. Some people out there think every man is inherently misogynistic and will never learn his lesson. So you have to not only talk about how you're going to make a movie starring a woman who kicks butt. Then you talk about how you're making a movie starring a woman who kicks butt. Then you talk about how you've made a movie starring a woman who kicks butt. And in the movie itself, the woman talks about how much she kicks butt. And she kicks the butts of men who are created in your vision of what a man is. Birds of Prey is about a group of women who simply go out and prove their worth. Not to everybody else, but to themselves. They weren't fighting scum because they were men. They were fighting scum because they were scum. My impression of Black Mask was not that he thinks women are inferior to men, but that everyone is inferior to him. He's a sick, creepy control freak in this movie. That's what made him a good villain. He was not a cheap stereotype created for commentary. It would be so easy to turn Birds of Prey into social commentary, but they chose not to turn it into that. Maybe that's why it didn't meet expectations at the box office. Maybe the media won't support a movie with good, strong women characters that don't force social commentary on its viewers. Think about it this way. If you changed Huntress, Black Canary, Montoya, or Cassandra Cain to male, you really aren't changing their story at all. I really like that because it helps prove my point about what I've been saying about comic book characters for years. If you need your hero to be a certain gender, sexual identity, skin color, or religion for you to identify with them, then you don't understand what a hero is. Wait, you say. Look how Wonder Woman has inspired girls. It must matter for a hero to inspire their corresponding gender. You're making my point for me. If a female must be inspired by a female superhero, then by that logic, I must not be inspired by her because I'm not of the same gender. I guess the only DC characters I can find inspiration with are Catman and John Constantine, because those are the only white bisexual male DC characters that I can think of offhand. And I guess you might say they practice consensual non-monogamy. I guess even though Green Lantern is one of my favorite characters, I must not be able to find inspiration in the exploits of John Stewart, Simon Baz, or Jessica Cruz because I don't share the same skin color as them. Do you see how asinine your notion is? You should be inspired by the deeds of the hero. And yes, I get it. We're talking about fictional characters here. But the same idea applies to real people. There's a reason why I would take Wonder Woman over Superman or Batman any day. I take more inspiration from her than I do Superman or Batman. Montoya breaks free of people who took credit for her work and held her back. Canary breaks free from a control freak. Huntress gets revenge on the people who killed her family, then finds a new purpose in life. Hell, even Harley breaks free from toxic relationships. Anyone can and should take inspiration in their stories. If the only good female superhero movie is one that beats you over the head with its message of girl power, this isn't a movie you'll enjoy. If you like your superhero movies homogenized and sanitized for audiences of all ages, this isn't a movie you'll enjoy. If you think all heroes have to be noble with some grand musical score when they appear on the screen, this isn't the movie for you. If you want a really good action movie with character development, this is a movie you'll enjoy. If you want a crazy, slightly raunchy Harley Quinn inspired by the last few years of her solo comic book series, this is a movie you'll enjoy. If you want a movie with strong female characters that doesn't scream from atop a soapbox while still delivering an empowering message, this is a movie you'll enjoy. How much did I enjoy it? I already own a copy, bought it the day it came out. I'm not saying you should own it, but I definitely recommend giving it a look. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.